Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, April 26th, 2024. We'll start today's reading, as usual, on the front page where your story lives. Earth Week Tree Planting. ADM volunteers, great big picture here, from left, Brianne Conway, Saeed Kwaramaleki, and Jesse Sims, plant a tree at Kiwanis Park to celebrate Earth Week in Decatur. And it's a good size tree. And they've got a hole large enough to plant it. And three people are putting it into the earth. And Decatur Park District employees prepare the Fairview Park Tree Nursery for volunteers to plant 250 saplings in the former pool site on Thursday. State House backing Bears plan unlikely for now. Team, city, cheer, but state's money likely to remain on sidelines. This is from Springfield. As Chicago Bears officials laid out their $4.7 billion plan for a new domed stadium on the city's lakefront, Mayor Brandon Johnson and others cheered as if the NFL's founding franchise had just scored a touchdown. But the team seems to be throwing a Hail Mary pass in Springfield, where state lawmakers and Governor J.B. Pritzker appear unlikely to do the blocking and tackling necessary to muscle through legislation that would unlock the $900 million in public funding the team says is needed for the project. The long-awaited plan, unveiled at Wednesday's press conference at Soldier Field, calls for a $3.2 billion stadium along with at least $325 million, but perhaps as much as $1.5 billion for the infrastructure upgrades. The Bears have pledged about $2.3 billion toward the stadium construction, while asking the state, through the Illinois State Facilities Authority, to issue $900 million in taxpayer-backed bonds to cover the rest. The city and the state would also be on the hook for the infrastructure bill. The ISFA issued bonds, which were used to build guaranteed rate field and renovate Soldier Field, are backed by an existing 2% city hotel tax. Bonds for those earlier projects are set to expire in 2033. The Bears have proposed issuing new bonds to be paid back over a 40-year period. This would require the approval of state lawmakers. This project will result in no new taxes on the residents of Chicago, Johnson said in backing public funding, proclaiming that the new stadium had the potential to be the crown jewel of the city of Chicago. Bears President Kevin Warren, though conceding that this is not an easy project, said that by working together, the team, city, and state can create win-win-win situations. But 15 miles away from the glitzy rollout event, Pritzker and legislative leaders said that they remained unconvinced that the Bears' proposal is a win for taxpayers. I'm highly skeptical of the proposal that's been made, and I believe strongly that this is not a high priority for legislators, and certainly not for me, Pritzker told reporters at an unrelated press conference in Maywood to promote his health insurance reform legislation. Pritzker then observed that voters in Kansas City just rejected a referendum that would have authorized public funding for new Royals ballpark and renovations to Arrowhead Stadium, home of the Super Bowl champions Chiefs. I don't really think that the people of Chicago or across Illinois feel any different than that, Pritzker said, adding that he had not been invited to the Bears announcement. House Speaker Chris Welch, Democrat of Hillside, at the same event, said that if he were to put this issue on board for a vote right now, it would fail, and it would fail miserably. Senate President Don Harmon, Democrat of Oak Park, said in a statement that he echoed Pritzker's skepticism. Warren, however, said that The time is now to get the stadium deal done, insisting that the team will push for a package before lawmakers adjourn their spring session at the end of May and not punt to the fall veto session. He said waiting could cost valuable time, both delaying the stadium's opening date and increasing the overall project cost. Could the Bears come out of the state capitol winners in a few weeks? Well, sure. Even Welch, who said it is highly unlikely, said that the Bears can get the deal they're looking for at this political climate, acknowledged that in Springfield, environments change. But if I were the Bears, I would consider drawing up a new game plan. The same with the White Sox and the Chicago Red Stars and any other Illinois team looking for a public subsidy for a new stadium. As I wrote last month regarding the White Sox quest for a new ballpark, the amount of doubt and distaste for public funding in the capital should not be underestimated and cannot be overstated. That's true in both the House and the Senate. But look no further than Illinois' billionaire governor has remained consistent in his general opposition to public subsidies for facilities used by privately owned teams and in his skepticism of the projects that have specifically been floated. Of course, politicians can change their minds. Look at Johnson, a former Chicago Teachers Union organizer elected with heavy support from the progressive grassroots. He opposed subsidies as a candidate last year, but flipped to the point of being part of the Bears' rollout announcement on Wednesday. But I'm not so sure about Pritzker in this instance. In the 2.5 years since he started to be asked about this topic, there's been a little deviation off his general position despite shifting plans from the Bears and added wrenches like the Sox trial balloon. For instance, when asked about the possibility of helping to finance a stadium project following the Bears' September 2021 announcement of a purchase agreement for the 326-acre Arlington Park property, Pritzker said, "That's not something that we're looking at." He was asked again in a gubernatorial debate in October 2022, his answer even more to the point. "Look, I'm a Bears fan. I support the Chicago Bears, but I do not think that the state should be funding the private development of a stadium anywhere in the state." In April 2023, Pritzker told reporters in response to a legislative proposal that would lock in the Bears' property tax rates for the now mothballed Arlington Park development, that the state really shouldn't be in the business of providing handouts to private industry, and that's what the Bears are. When the Sox entered the fray earlier this year with a proposal for a publicly financed ballpark in the city's South Loop neighborhood, Pritzker said that he started out really reluctant and would be against it unless a case is made that the investment yields a long-term return for the taxpayers, something he said he had not yet been displayed. In March, Pritzker said that the Bears' commitment of a $2 billion private money toward the project was a good first step, but alone not enough to warrant state involvement in the project. "I want to say one more time, we're prioritizing the use of dollars here for people who need it," Pritzker said. "Wealthy owners of sports teams, I respect that they run private businesses, and they want them to be profitable, and they want constantly to provide better facilities for their customers, but I don't think that should be the highest priority for the state of Illinois." He said he may say a little differently each time, but the message has essentially been the same. In this context, it's hard to see Pritzker moving off such a long-held position in the course of just a few weeks. Now, there are a few things the Bears can do to drum up support in the legislature and perhaps turn up pressure on Pritzker and others. The smart play is probably to deploy organized labor to help sell the plan. The unions collectively still have enough clout to make a difference under the Capitol Dome. They will be incentivized by the promise of thousands of stadium construction jobs to help the Bears and perhaps the Sox. But again, if past is prologue, that will not deter Pritzker from his stance. Kevin Warren and the Bears have 4 weeks to draw up a legislative play in Springfield, but they may need to call an audible. This is by Brendan Moore. Macon County Courts. Forsyth daycare operator gets 14 years in prison. Burris sentenced after plea deal in baby's traumatic injury death. As a bereaved and sobbing family looked on in court, the Forsyth home daycare operator, who inflicted fatal injuries to their baby daughter by shaking her in a fit of frustrated rage, was sentenced Thursday to 14 years in prison. Taylor D. Burris, 26, took a plea deal negotiated by defense attorney Steve Jones and pleaded guilty to a newly added charge of second-degree murder. Macon County Circuit Court presiding judge Thomas Griffith handed down close to the maximum penalty available for the offense, which could have been seen Burris sentenced to 15 years. 7-week-old Marin Gallagher from Bement died from traumatic head injuries on May 18, 2022, as doctors fought to save her. Detective Sergeant Roger Pope with the Macon County Sheriff's Office said Burris has stood by and done nothing at first after the baby vomited and went into distress after being shaken because she would not stop crying. Burris eventually summoned help, and the baby was airlifted to a Springfield Hospital trauma center. Pope said Burris had tried to lie about what she had done, but eventually confessed to him in an interview she later tried to have suppressed in subsequent court hearings. Taylor admitted that she had Googled information about shaken baby syndrome the evening Marin was in the hospital and lay dying. Pope said in a sworn affidavit about the case, he said Burris had not only lied to try to cover up her crime, but had failed to do anything quickly to get the baby help when she knew it was seriously ill because of her actions. Taylor admitted that the incident occurred around 10:40 a.m., but didn't call EMS, Emergency Medical Services, until about 2:05. P.M., Pope added. When on the phone with dispatchers, Taylor said that the infant had been in an unresponsive and impeded or apneic breathing state for 20 minutes before she called EMS. This was clearly neglectful behavior. Marin's father, Mac Gallagher, in a victim statement that read to the court before sentencing, called out Burris for initially lying about what she had done. What absolutely killed me is knowing that Marin felt pain and suffered so long before help arrived, he told Burris, who sat next to her lawyer, staring ahead. The sentence Taylor will receive today will never be enough. Marin did not deserve what happened to her. What could have a 7-week-old baby possibly do to deserve this kind of abuse? Hannah Gallagher, Marin's mom, told Burris she is left trying to be happy, upbeat mother to her two sons while constantly struggling against the negative emotional pull of crushing grief. I miss her every day, she said of her daughter. I am sad because I never got to plan her first birthday. I never got to hear her first words or got to put pigtails in her hair. I feel I will never be happy again. I don't like the person I am now or I am becoming. I feel like I am not a good mom to my boys. I used to be fun, laugh all the time, joke around, and now I can't even do that. You took that from me when you took my daughter, she said. Bill Gallagher, Marin's grandfather, described seeing his granddaughter for the first time when she was born at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon. He said she was in perfect in every way and surrounded by the love of an extended family that treasured her. He told Burris he had last got to see the baby as she lay dying in hospital, again surrounded by her loving family. But love was not enough to protect Marin and shield her from the terrible hurt she'd been subjected to, he said. We all loved Marin so very much, and we always will. Burris had at first been charged with aggravated battery to a child involuntary manslaughter and creating a circumstance that caused the death of a child. She had appeared already to fight those charges, and at one stage the case looked to be headed for a jury trial and then a bench trial, but Burris changed her mind and entered the guilty plea to the newly added second-degree murder charge, with the judge then agreeing to dismiss all the earlier charges. In addition to the prison sentence, he also ordered Burris to pay $250 to have her DNA added to a criminal database maintained by the state police. Commenting outside the courtroom, Macon County State's Attorney Scott Reuter described the case as extremely sad and unfortunate. Asked if the victim's family was satisfied with the legal outcome, he replied, "I don't want to speak for them. And one of the things that we talked about is there's nothing that will ever replace their child." He said the family had been informed and consulted as negotiations with the defense progressed, what Burris would ultimately plead guilty to and the penalty she faced. This is the result that they, Marin's family, were willing to agree to as part of the negotiation, Reuter said. And the photo here on page A2 shows Jean Dubree, director of Child First Center, reading a victim impact statements from family during a sentencing for the 2022 death of 7-week-old Marin Gallagher at the Macon County Courthouse in Decatur on Thursday. Daycare owner Taylor Burris took a plea deal for a second-degree murder conviction and 14 years in prison. And the photo on the front page has Taylor Burris getting emotional listening to her defense attorney, Steve Jones, after a sentencing for the death of 7-week-old Marin Gallagher at the Macon County Courthouse in Decatur on Thursday. Burris made a plea deal for a second-degree murder conviction and 14 years in prison. On page A2, state police warn against fake cop scam. The Illinois State Police is warning the public to be on their guard against yet another phone scam aimed at stealing financial information. A news release said that they have been informed of victims receiving calls from someone purporting to be an investigator with the state police, claiming, ironically, that the victim's identity had been stolen. This is a scam, the news release said. ISP special agents will not make cold calls requesting personal financial information or ask you to confirm personal or financial information. If you receive a phone call from someone claiming to be an ISP investigator, ask for the caller's name, badge number, and phone number, and then hang up. The police said, never provide or confirm personal or financial information over the phone to strangers. It's easy to verify an ISP special agent's identity by contacting one of the agency's 7 investigative regions throughout the state. If anyone believes their financial information has been compromised, they should contact one of the 3 national credit bureaus to have a security freeze placed on their credit. This stops anyone from opening credit in your name. Victims can also call the Illinois Attorney General's Identity Theft Hotline at 1-866-999-5630. Again, that's 866-999-5630. In more local and state news on page A3, Life in Focus. Teens tout vocational training to state school's chief. Mattoon. Students at CHS Industries in Mattoon Lift are getting educations in a variety of trades, and many of them also have been developing their public speaking skills in the process. They put those skills into practice on Thursday as they gave presentations about their vocational programs to State Superintendent Tony Sanders during his site tours there, as well as to other visiting officials. Mattoon High School senior Brody Renfro, who is enrolled in the Leadership Institute at LIFT, was among those leading presentations. Renfro said that he enrolled as someone who was shy and stammered while speaking. He said his experiences there, including job shadowing at the Coles County Courthouse, have since given him confidence and the desire to become a prosecutor. Lyft has put my life in focus and helped pave the road for me, Renfro said, of his regional high school vocational training program, located in a renovated downtown office building. The students spoke to Sanders, Illinois State Board of Education members, Regional Superintendent of Schools Kyle Thompson, State Representative Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet, and local business and government leaders. The Lyft tour group also included Sean Covey and other representatives of the Franklin Covey Coaching Company, from which the Leadership Institute there draws its curriculum. Thompson said that Sanders, who was previously superintendent of School District U-46 in Elgin, has made it a priority to try to visit a different school district every week since he was named a state superintendent in January 2023. His accessibility is fantastic, Thompson said. During his visit to Charleston High School, Thompson met with CHS Industries vocational program students working in the Trojan Brew Coffee Shop and the Trojan Design Center in the newly renovated 400 classroom section on the north side of the building. Students in the adjacent Trojan A&M Center also spoke with Thompson. They expanded facility houses The expanded facility houses agriculture, construction, small engine mechanics, and other trades, classroom and workshop spaces, plus a greenhouse. Thanks for letting the students lead the conversations. They did a great job, Thompson said afterward, while speaking with administrators and teachers. Senior Parker Pounds and junior Kaylin Nolte, who are interns at the Trojan A&M Center, gave presentations there. Nolte, who plans to major in agriculture science-related field, said that she loves studying and working at this center, particularly interacting with customers at the annual plant sale there. Thompson said he also was impressed to hear that the Trojan A&M Center is hosting a geometry and construction class that is popular with students and is being expanded to offer a second session. The geometry component with the construction trades is amazing. I wish more districts would do that, Thompson said. At Mattoon Lyft, L-I-F-T, Thompson said that other visitors met with students representing the academic programs on each of the building's 7 levels. Those programs consist of child care, communications, culinary arts, HVAC, green energy, robotics, information technology, leadership and manufacturing, architecture and construction. Bianca Arguelles, a senior from Arcola, and Ash Allison, a junior from Mattoon, were among the presenters in the communication studios on the lower level of Lyft. They said that the classes there focus on audio, video, editing, music, composition, songwriting, media production, and digital sound design. Allison said that the communication program's internship opportunities include one where students can help operate the sound and light systems at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan. She added that those are fun internships. Noah Noble, a junior from Mattoon who is studying communications at Lyft, also discussed how instructors there help him and other students with personal budgeting. This prompted Thompson to ask about his plans to save for a car while working at the Freddy's restaurant in Mattoon and about his long-term career plans. I kind of have a big aspiration to own my own restaurant someday, Noble responded, adding that he plans to enroll in the culinary program next year at Lyft. And the two photos here, the large one shows State Superintendent Tony Sanders. He's second from the right in the picture. And Franklin Covey CEO Paul Walker speaking with culinary arts students on Thursday while touring the Mattoon Lift Regional High School Vocational Training Center. The students are Dante England, from in the foreground here on the left, Brittany Pinnell, right of him, Logan Fitt, and Ethan Freeman, all from Mattoon. And they are lined up on one side, and the Covey and Sanders are on the right side of the picture with plates of food, and there are steam trays here offering food for them to try and enjoy. And in the background, we see other people in suits, and on the wall it says innovative. And the second picture shows Regional Superintendent of Schools Kyle Thompson on the left and State Superintendent Tony Sanders speaking with Charleston High School junior Kaylin Nolte on Thursday in the small engine workshop area of the Trojan A&M Center. Nolte is serving as an intern in this facility. She's explaining some things to the two gentlemen standing there. Unity Christian to host Red and Black Gala. Unity Christian School is hosting its annual Red and Black Gala on Friday, May 3rd. The dinner auction-style event will usher in the Unity era, following the name change this year from the long-held Lutheran School Association. Doors open at 5:30 p.m. at the school at 2001 East Mound Road, with a red carpet entry for guests ahead of a night that will include appetizers, drinks, dinner, and a dessert dash, and silent and live auctions. The live auction includes custom-made items ideal for your backyard patio, Diamond Box Cardinals baseball tickets, tickets for the Polar Express, and a week in Naples, Florida. Tickets are $40 per person and are available at flow.page/unity-dinner-auction, all one word. Again, that's flow.page/unity-dinner-auction. Child care is available through the National Honor Society. Those who purchase tickets prior to April 30th are entered to win a red carpet arrival for up to three couples. That includes limousine service to and from the event. In the four-day forecast today, today there will be a shower and a thunderstorm, high of 66, wind southeast, 15 to 20 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy and breezy, wind south-southeast, 10 to 20 miles an hour, and a low of 63. Tomorrow, a stray thunderstorm, windy, high of 78 and low of 67. The winds will be 15 to 25 miles an hour. Sunday, a heavy thunderstorm, windy, high of 78, low of 64. Wind 15 to 20 miles an hour from the 25 miles an hour from the south. And Monday, some rain and a thunderstorm. Wind southwest 10 to 20 miles an hour, high of 74, low of 52. And we take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, April 26th, 2024. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.